Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome back. This is the show where me and two of my friends dive into the dungeons of diversity and laugh about our tool tabletop tales. We have...
Leander and
Jeremy Cobb.
I knew that was going to happen. We're leaving that in.
No edits. I love it. Yes.
Maybe try that one more time. You know, after you go
we
first.
Should, Jeremy, we should mix up our names. You take part of my name and I'll take part of yours.
Oh dear, that was brilliant. Thanks guys. Thank you. That was a gift. What a way to start.
This is Three Black Halflings.
You will come to terms with your own weakness.
Full Prince vibe?
Woo. Like a beautiful play.
Focus on your task.
Yeah.
You think this is just a game?
There is no board. The board is hypothetical. Supper and lead.
We're about to get into something real big now.
I can't tell you how much I enjoyed making that. It's great fun.
It's the scream.
Scream.
So here we are, episode two. How have you guys been since we last recorded? Episode one is out there now. It's quite exciting to have it out there. I was just going to actually ask you, Natty, if you've recovered from your mental. How many hours was it? 10-hour session that you did the other day. 12 p.m. to 10 hours. How was it?
Yeah.
How did it go?
It was two separate sessions, to be fair. And I did have a break to eat.
Were they different campaigns, or were they the same campaign?
No, different campaigns. Fair. One in which we're using the campaign to devise a piece of theatre around it, an Afrocentric campaign. We found a lovely black DM named Henry Metal, who's running us an Afrocentric campaign.
You know Henry?
Yeah, just met him.
What?
Henry, the last job that I did... I was on the Holes tour, the Holes national tour, and I was understudying for all of the non-white characters, and Henry played Armpit,
and he and I
were co-DMing a campaign for the cast of Holes.
Oh, that's amazing, because Safia is also in the project with me. Do you know Safia Inga? Was she not on Holes?
No, she may have been in the first cast. But, yeah. She wasn't on the tour that I was doing.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Wow, look at this. Three back halflings bringing people together, guys.
Yeah. Oh, man, tell him I said hi.
I will. So we're playing with him. And then we started doing that. We started looking at the world and then playing a bit and like really, because we're using it to devise around, we had to get really detailed about characters, world, understanding, everything. And then I went on to play a game that I play with Roald Dahk, a Dragon Ode, and that just took so long. There were just so many ghouls.
I wish you guys at home could see the face that Unati's pulling right now. There is genuine pain on her face.
It's
not even head and hands, it's head and fists.
Yeah, there's some anger for these ghouls.
It just took so long, and it was. And also, I kept warning them, like, can we not go into the crypt? Can we not do that? Can we not go into the creepy crypt where the creepy ghost white lady is singing about being lost and suffering? This is scary. I don't want to go into the crypt.
It's especially if you have there's nothing in the cave that you want. Like, you're just kind of passing by and you hear, la da 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 da. Or, for instance, you see a creepy town that is clearly filled with zombies and has a horrible atmosphere. Why are you going into this environment unless you have a specific... Yeah.
But could this be a hangover from what we discuss all the time, which is black culture within movies, and that is that the black guy traditionally dies first. So maybe that's part of it. Inherently we're just like, do you know what? No, not today.
Not today.
Yeah.
And also it was really annoying because the task was done. We were tasked with clearing the ghouls from the cemetery. He said nothing about the crypts. Nothing about the crypts. We did the job.
Was she a banshee?
No, she was. Oh, so she was a ghost. It was the spirit of an old elfin princess who was dishonored and disgraced and was not buried with her family. And then she asked us to find her remains. And she's not paying us. I'm the rogue, and I'm like, there's no money in this. So let's go back and get our cash.
yep, get your cash. Get your cash, get paid. Brilliant.
I'm fully on your side with this.
Absolutely. Yeah, I could not be more with you. So this week I thought we would dive into some personal experiences for playing Dungeons and Dragons. There's a lot going on in the world, guys. I don't know if you've noticed. There's just a lot right now. For me, I know a big part of why I play this game is for... I find it's like the purest form of escapism. And that's definitely part of the reason why I play. I also play for this reason as well. I'm just going to play something out loud right now. This, I can't tell you how much just made me laugh last week. I was going through the recording, editing the podcast, and this noise comes out of nowhere. And like, even my girlfriend was like, what was that? And I was like, that's Jeremy. And I suddenly had this, like, I suddenly twigged that I was like, oh, like he makes that noise every single session. At some point, he'll make this noise, whether he's DMing or playing, he will end up making this noise. And I suddenly was like, do you know what? Like that is something I love so much about it. Like that noise is so normal to me. You know, I'm so used to hearing this absolutely ridiculous noise. Yeah. Do you know, like, it's like, where would you ever, you know, but only in Dungeons and Dragons would you and your friends share something as ludicrous as that scream.
I think I originally got that scream from our mutual friend Ryan.
No way.
Because I think he was the first person I ever heard do it. As like a character, there was one specific instance I remember was there was this guy who was a werebear, but he was our friend, and we had like chained him to a tree in case he transformed again.
Understandable.
But then a big old white dragon jumped over the cliff and blasted at us with its freeze breath, and the rest of us like ran behind the tree that he was chained to, but he was like, help me, no, yeah! He's getting roasted by this. By the friend. I think that just stuck with me. And now I just use it.
It's just such a fantastic noise. And I just think it's that kind of thing that you'd never share with a group otherwise. The fact that you could make such a ridiculous thing. So yeah, I just wanted to share that out. But you know, Artie, why don't you go ahead, kick us off? Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you love playing this game, both as a DM and a player?
I guess similarly to you, it's for escapism and just kind of doing the fantastical, doing the impossible, or bringing in my inspiration from my favorite characters from comic books or other sort of pop culture and media, and the diasporic canon and the canon in general. So like, I play because I generally like to beat things up. And I'm not allowed to do that on the streets because that's a crime.
That is indeed a crime.
So I don't do it in the streets like a nice human. I save it for D&D.
Amazing. And then
I
can...
It is also, in many cases, I would say, morally
wrong. I mean, it's morally wrong.
Not just that it's illegal. Probably shouldn't do it.
In general, shouldn't do that.
Exactly. Like,
that kid frowned at me! Mr. Beating each other.
You cannot walk around these streets just beating people. But
this is a family show, guys. Yeah. This is a family show.
Yeah,
so
it's not allowed. It's not allowed. But I do get to kind of like have fun with that side of myself in a kind of free of consequence. No, I lie, because it's never free of consequence.
It's never free of consequence. You've taught us that in that last session.
I always end up having to roll initiative.
That's actually worth discussing, even. The idea of, because that's really, I think, worth getting into, perhaps not right now, but like the idea of having consequences in a D&D game, because there, I think a lot of classic D&D games, people don't really dig too deep into the consequences of what's happening. So it's like, oh yeah, we just killed these goblins and took their stuff.
Sure.
That's it. But like, there's never a question of like, you know, those goblins may have had families. Mm-hmm. And they may have taken that stuff for like a very specific reason.
I feel like I do this a lot in my games. My chaos group, as I described them last week, they recently had a run-in with a town's guard who was basically going to alert the rest of the guards to something slightly illegal that they were doing. And so they dispatched him, and then when they got back to, they sort of got around the town, they found the sort of weeping mother of this town's guard, and they were like, oh man, that's not okay. And so, like, you know, there's definitely consequences for sure. And then, yeah, Jeremy, what draws you to playing Dungeons and Dragons?
For me, I think a lot of it is certainly, as far as DMing goes, a creative outlet. I get to throw all kinds of like crazy ideas that I normally wouldn't be able to put into, like, if I was going to try and write a play. I may not be able to write a play about a massive invasion of like sleeper cell lycanthropic halflings trying to stage a coup in a big halfling kingdom.
Sure.
That's usually not what you're going to see at like the National. But
yeah,
the,
yeah, sure.
Whereas with something like, and I think that is a big part of it. Also the fact that it's a collaborative storytelling effort and that I think just the element of play, like of getting to play with other people to create a story, and also, I mean, it can be fun to like defeat something. Like, you just, I've defeated this evil thing, and me and my friends are victorious. Like, there's a definite charge out of that.
Absolutely. I think for me, I'd probably say there's a few of those things that you guys have mentioned. Definitely the pop culture thing. My first character I created was based on a character from one of my favorite books. And again, yeah, that sense of play, I think, is what draws a lot of people to it. Because for me, what's so great about the kind of the rule structure of D&D that it is really free, I find. Because quite often I'm drawn to sort of like RPG based games, mostly because I like the freedom to be able to actually just go where I want to and for a large part say what I want to say, or, you know, react to a character the way I want to react to them. And I think that's what I enjoy so much, is that it's genuinely free. And I'd say it's probably the most free sort of fantasy based experience I think you can have. I don't think I'm sort of speaking in hyperbole when I say that. Like, you are able to craft items that have never been created before. You're able to, you know, travel to distant places which have never been explored. Like, that kind of thing, I think, is really liberating. It's really, really fun, especially if you're a nerdy kid like me who grew up just utterly obsessed with, like, Lord of the Rings and you know, stuff like that. So I think that you guys are, yeah, absolutely right with that one.
I think also that's true of tabletop games in general.
Oh, for sure.
Certainly role-playing tabletop games. I think that obviously I haven't played, D&D is really the only one that I've played, I think, but it seems as though that general idea of what you're talking about, it gives you much more freedom than what you'd get in even something like video games, which is like one of the other artistic mediums that is the most based on your own agency as a player or as a participant.
Yeah.
I mean, I sometimes play Vampire the Masquerade, and there is also that same sort of level of freedom and ability to play. I've never been games master for it, so I'm not necessarily like clear on whether you can create items and that kind of thing. But I feel like there's a lot of freedom in terms of character building and where you want to drive the story and what you want to do. And even though you shouldn't separate the party, I find in Vampire the Masquerade, you can really just go, well, I'm out. Peace. I'm going to do my own
thing.
Bye. And then the GM's like, okay, I've got to run two separate storylines now until you guys come back together.
Yeah,
love
that.
Because
love
you
it
can
happens.
Just go, they want to kill me and they want to take me back to like the prince of the council. So I need to run.
Yeah, that's fair.
Wow,
that's totally fair. That sounds really interesting. Actually, we should. That's like a whole other episode discussing that.
Yeah.
I think that to your point though about freedom, you know, for me, the freedom is what breeds investment as well.
Yeah.
Both from my players and when I play myself, it's like it allows us to really invest in the story and invest in what's happening, what's going on, to care about those characters.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what I then really enjoy, especially, you know, for me as like an actor, that's what I do. That's what we like live for, you know, is that sense of really feeling like we're in something. And I think that for people who aren't actors as well, it is an enjoyable experience. It's an enjoyable experience really investing in something to the point where you are like 100% in. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's times where I'll watch shows or I'll even be in, you know, DMing. And like one of my favorite moments was with the group that you're with, Jeremy, and it was at the end of a really, really long in-game day where basically at the start of the day, one of the group's sort of effectively one of the party members had been slain, and they basically spent the rest of the day just charging around trying to find whoever this was. And one of the characters called Jinxon, who is played by my friend Johnny, just played the whole, like literally 3 or 4 sessions, just played it. It was so committed. And at the end of the day, had a really, really touching moment with one of these NPCs. It was one of the best friends of the character who had died. And a really, really touching moment about kind of like grief and how we process it. And the NPC was a child. And I had to play the child in this moment. And, you know, and I cried. I was fully there. And I was fully invested. And it was so moving because I was like, you know, I'm getting counseled here by this, by one of my friends, but sort of on a deeper level than that, like this is a really genuinely interesting discussion about grief and how we handle it. And something amazing to share with, especially, you know, I think there's a lot of conversations about sort of mental health and being open and honest. And I think like actually sharing that kind of experience in a safe space, like D&D actually feels kind of important for me. And I definitely feel like in many times I felt it have an effect on me personally. And I would say, yeah, that's a big thing, is I feel like it does really affect me personally. And I will leave a session and be on a high for the next 2 hours because I'm just like, oh, man, like, oh, just this and this and all these pictures in my head. And
Yeah. It's like when you finish a really good performance of a play.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of times.
Absolutely.
You just have that, whoa, yeah, that was so great.
Yeah.
And you have to, like, go out and walk and talk and... or get drunk, as the case may be.
Yeah, yes. It's that shared experience with a group of people is quite special, I think. Awesome. That was lovely. I think we should move on, and I'd like to discuss, as it's always the theme with this show, like to talk about diversity and inclusion within Dungeons & Dragons. And I'd love to dive into an article I think you actually pointed out to us, Jeremy, was... sent by Wizards of the Coast about diversity and inclusion. So I thought I'll read some little snippets of it and then we can just go ahead and discuss what we think. Dungeons & Dragons teaches us that diversity is strength. For only a diverse group of adventurers can overcome many challenges a D&D story presents. It then goes on to recognize that there is no end goal in mind. This is an ongoing commitment, which I thought was a good thing to point out. And this was one paragraph that I thought was quite nuanced and speaks a lot about the D&D experience. And that is, one of the explicit design goals of 5th edition D&D was to depict humanity in all of its beautiful diversity by depicting characters who represent an array of ethnicities, gender identities, sexual orientations, and beliefs. We want people to feel at home around the game table and see positive reflections of themselves within our products. Human in D&D means everyone, not just fantasy versions of Northern Europeans, and the D&D community is more diverse than it's ever been. Personally, I feel like we've made a huge impact. We said it's Northern true. Europeans last week. They listened to the show, guys.
Guys,
listen to the
made coast, it. Listen we've to the made show. Every single episode. Well, we could just end the show here.
We could just end the show here. But no, what was your impressions of sort of that, especially that first bit? We'll go on to talk about what their actions are in a second, but just that first sort of part of the article.
I thought that it was very. I think it was a much needed acknowledgement of how the fantasy role-playing landscape, just the fantasy landscape in general, has changed, especially in the past 10 years, 20 years. The popularity of Dungeons & Dragons has exploded since 5th edition and the advent of Critical Role and other online, like, actual play shows and, Stranger Things.
Stranger Things.
Community did it even before Stranger Things. And I think you can't just look at the game as a game for nerdy white men or nerdy white boys, as the case may be. It's now a game that not even nerds, not white, not men, anybody can play. And I think it's
absolutely
very important for Wizards to acknowledge that. Actually, I think they had started to try to, even as far back as the 5e, I think it's either the Player Handbook or Dungeon Master's Guide. It was really interesting to see with both the racial diverse, because I was looking up articles when I found this one, and somebody had gone through and seen, looked at all of the art for the characters in, I believe it was the Player's Handbook. And there were they were looking that it was a much more diverse book than they'd had in the past in terms of both gender and race.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they even changed the human, the person that represented the human race to be a black woman, I think, was things like that. I think they've definitely been doing for a while. I thought it was a pretty good statement. I thought it was just as sensitive as I'd expect. I think that generally this community is very good at tackling sensitive subjects because I think it's been a bit more diversity and inclusion facing for a while, other than like the other industries haven't. It's always had LGBTQ plus members. It's always had, you know, quite a racially diverse following. So I think that it's had to tackle these things a little bit earlier, perhaps. So it's a little bit further along the line, but I think it's still got a little bit of time to go. I think that it made a good point of saying how everyone's not just sort of Northern European white, but I kind of felt like what I maybe would have liked to see in that statement was how they maybe would try and actively like embrace more culture for influence, like different cultures, kind of what we're talking about on this show. I think like that would have been a positive thing to maybe have thrown in there, just like that we are looking at other sources of sort of material outside of just, you know, like Vikings and knights.
Because even later in the statement, I don't even think they address some of it, but I don't think they address what is specifically.
About like sort of a building with other cultures.
I think I may just potentially echo what both of you have just sort of been saying, but I think for me personally, seeing that statement as a fairly green player and dungeon master just has really kind of made me feel safe in then pushing those boundaries myself. I think a lot of the times when I've come into games, and I've been, for argument's sake, been in discussion with a GM, I've kind of felt that I can't necessarily, with as politely as possible, push back on some things because I'm coming from a different cultural space. Sure. I think one of my first characters, I wanted her deity to be Oshun, which is a Nigerian goddess of the sun. And I spent time with the DM who essentially insisted that there was no space for that. And was like, I wouldn't know how to make that work necessarily. I'm like, well, I don't. And now in retrospect, I don't understand how mechanically that would have posed any issues. And I don't know why my character couldn't have had a goddess from another pantheon that is just outside of the Eurocentric one. So I think what I'm trying to say is that statement, that acknowledgement has just kind of given the breathing space where I can go, okay, cool. I can be as brave as I want in my own creating, but also in my own creating of characters, and really kind of push that and just and unapologetically just take influence from everywhere, and feel safe in that.
I think that's a really lovely point, actually, about feeling braver at the table as a player and as a DM. I think it's quite often that you'd I felt anyway, especially when talking about fantasy, that I've felt kind of conflicted about wanting to speak up. Like, I remember being a kid and I was like desperate to be Legolas, you know, like even when I was a kid and we were like just running around the playground and like, you know, I was like I want to be Legolas, but they'd be like, nah, you're not Legolas, do you know what I mean? And so like, but just like even being able to kind of like push back and be like, no, I'm totally Legolas, that's fine. But
I know exactly what you're talking about. I had that exact same thing. It was for me when we played Star Wars, I was only allowed to play Lando or Chewbacca.
And then, or Mace Windu, right?
Well, this was pre-prequels.
Oh, okay, sure. Was, so like, he wasn't even...
This was like, yeah, I was like 6 or 7 years old. No, I was like 5 years old when they were... So this was pre-prequels. And then when we played X-Men, I was only allowed to play Beast.
I'm allowed to be Storm, so, you know.
Well, yeah, I was only allowed to be Nightcrawler. But to be fair, Nightcrawler was my favorite, so I was like, that's fine.
I mean, Storm's pretty badass, but I'm not Jamaican, so I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
But I think that's a really interesting point. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that places like Wizards coming out with these kind of statements and these kind of commitments does make a huge difference, because if we look at now the explosion of Dungeons and Dragons, D&D has a huge impact on the way we think about and the way we process fantasy, especially within this sort of slightly more should we say, like, I don't want to say sort of nerdy communities, but yeah, like, you know, the people who really follow it and really dig into it, you know, and it really informs their opinions. Like, the more I've been thinking about what we were talking about last week, just in terms of, like, how actually we as DMs can be vehicles to help teach people about these things and teach each other as well about inclusion and that kind of thing, I think is actually a really... it's a really useful tool. I think there's actually been a few times where, like, as a DM, I've, you know, like, role-played as a woman or something, and if I felt like one of my players has said something troubling, I might be like, oh, actually, and, like, and, you know, I might call it out, you know? And I think that it's that kind of thing. We have to be braver to just go, no, actually, I'm just going to pump the brakes a sec. I think we should unpick that. Or, alternatively, if you don't want to necessarily come out of the game, you can do it in-game. Do you mean you can find ways in-game to I'm sort of struggling to think of an example, but, you know, to say, well, actually, I don't think that's a fair... I think that's a fair statement, or do you know what I mean? And allow the NPC to, like, push back and be like, no, I'm not going to take that from you. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Then maybe turn that NPC into a really high-level paladin and have them kill the party for their transgressions. No, don't go that far. Don't go that far.
Your microaggressions have found you
out. Yes.
You will be punished.
Look, yes, on my paladin list of sins here, microaggressions is at the top. righteous smite. TPK, love it.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Let me go ahead and go through some of the other points they made about what they're sort of actively trying to do. They start off by talking about how drow and orcs in particular have been a race or species that has been portrayed as stereotypically very evil over the years. And I do agree, they say in this, we have been trying already. I do believe that's true. Like I said last week about the Explorer's Guide to Wildemount that they released in tandem with Critical Role, I think that had some really interesting takes on drow, had some really interesting takes on orcs and their kind of presence in the world. But this was my favourite bit about the release, or what they said was, later this year we will release a product, not yet announced, that offers players a way to customise their character's origin, including the option to change ability score increases that come with being an elf, dwarf, or one of the other playable folk. This option emphasizes that each player in the game is individual and with their own capabilities. I thought that was actually probably that was my biggest takeaway. I was like, that really feels like a tool for introducing more people to the game, making people, like we discussed last week, feel more comfortable to dive into other characters. What do you guys think of both the Drowned Orc thing and the potential little gameplay shift?
I think the thing that excites me the most is absolutely the gameplay shift. Mm. Because when you're sort of rolling your ability stats, it's in that rubric where I like to really reflect my character's capabilities and reflect their background and their personality. Like, I like to go, okay, well... This race is supposed to be charismatic. Mm-hmm. However, this person is not going to be charismatic at all.
They're
just going to be really broody and mm-hmm. really strong and think that they're charismatic by virtue of being around their people in their youth. But when they come out into the world, they're gonna dance.
Yeah, they're going to get undone.
They're going to be rude. They're not going to be able to read social cues properly. Again, I will always stress this, I really like flaw. I really like dynamic characters that are really, really flawed. So I'm really excited about that.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I loved it for both the gameplay and the kind of diversity aspect as well. Just because I think that it allows you to, like, if you're like a player who likes maxing out their characters and stuff, you're kind of like then limited by what species and class you can actually, like, you know, jam together to make something interesting. Like, you'd probably be hard pushed to, like, create a barbarian gnome, for instance, because the stats just wouldn't, like, match up, or playing an orc wizard, because they have the minus to intelligence to their intelligence score. And so I think that it just allows for a bit more of that individuality. And what we were talking about last week in terms of making complex characters, I think it really feeds into that narrative, allowing people to create really unique and different characters. And so I think that really helps people with the sense of diversity and the sense of inclusion. So I quite enjoyed that personally, that part of the announcement.
Yeah, I think for me, I was glad that they finally were like, especially with the drow, that they pointed out that both of those, both orcs and drow they have some very unfortunate implications. Like, the drow immediately stuck out to me when I was first reading it, like, about D&D. You have all of these, like, elves are these beautiful, long-lived, incredible, like, elegant people, and all the depictions that you see of them are, like, they're usually white, coated, like, European, like, Northern European, kind of Aryan, except for the one group of elves who all have dark skin and who are all evil.
Evil.
Yeah.
Who live deep under the ground. And the whole thing is kind of like, okay, well, maybe. Yeah.
I'd actually kind of like to throw out as well, because specifically the drow thing, I think, raises an interesting question, especially with what you were saying earlier, Unati, was that with the drow, a part of their subjugation is due to the fact that they are kind of governed by a kind of evil or twisted goddess, or at least in some of the more traditional campaign settings. I believe it's the Raven Queen. Jeremy, you'll tell me if I'm wrong. Spider Queen. Yeah. Sorry, Spider Lolf. Queen. Yeah, it's Lolf the Spider Queen. And I just think that's kind of an interesting dynamic, the idea of having a group completely defined by their religious belief. You know, I think that's, I don't know, I'm not the most religious person myself, but I would love to hear if you guys have any thoughts about, because that's kind of what it felt like, that really stuck out for me, was they're really defined by their worship of Lolth. And it's almost like they had to take on every aspect of her worship. You know, you couldn't half worship Lolth. It was either like, you believe in chaos and death, or you don't support her. Do you know what I mean? And I would just be interested to hear what you guys thought of that.
I think that's some dangerous territory that you're skating on very, very thin ice. And I guess it just brings me back to sort of my singular point that people are complex. You can be, you can worship love light, you know, like you can like a pub brawl, but you're not necessarily down with murdering children. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
sure.
And that's okay. And I think when you get like really didactic about things like that, especially racial traits or religious beliefs, you're about to put your foot all the way in your mouth.
All the way in. Yeah. I love the idea of like chaos light, you know, like you can, like, I kind of feel like
a little chaos.
Like there's in the Wild Mountain, there's a deity called the Traveler, who's kind of like a, it's just like, hey, we don't want to hurt anyone, but like, you know, if you want to make them accidentally step in some poop, that's kind of fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, I love that kind of idea of like, it's just a bit of fun, you know.
Just like the cat pushing things off the table.
Yeah,
like,
literally.
That's the level of chaos we want.
Yeah.
I think for me, I'm definitely not an expert on the depictions of all the different races because I homebrew so much and tend to like disregard a lot of anyway, but in my readings on them, I've noticed a trend that the beings that are historically classed as evil usually have a are the ones who are listed as having a very strong connection to a deity that affects their actions. Because I think the idea for goblins is like, I can't remember the name of their god, but it has something to do with like it's either all goblins or all kobolds like immediately go to like hell, or it's not hell, but like basically a hellish plane where they have to like slave in service of this deity. So like all of them are just miserable. For orcs, it's all Grumsh, and like Grumsh, I think, pushes them to be more barbaric, and they're like really committed to Grumsh, and that's. But you don't like there isn't. From what I've seen, as large of, say, like a kobold pantheon or a goblin pantheon or an orc pantheon in comparison to something like the dwarven pantheon or the elvish pantheon. But then again, within the elves, you have the dark elves who serve Lolf, and then within the dwarves, you have the gray dwarves, the Duergar, who serve Lodogwer. Yeah. Who is this evil dwarven god? Like it almost, what it reminds me of is the depiction of the orcs in the original Lord of the Rings books as being evil because they were like twisted and forced to be evil. So that it's not just, this is an evil bunch of people, but it's like, oh yes, they have been forced into a specific mindset and now they're all just this way because of divine or other arcane reasons.
Yeah,
I kind of wonder what springs to mind. I kind of wonder whether part of it is creating that like very black and white good versus evil argument, which is that like if they are all the way gone, if they are all the way in support of something evil, it makes it really easy then to kind of lay morality to one side with the acts that you do because these guys are inherently bad. Yeah. They are just bad people. And I think maybe that's what like worshipping a deity gives you, is like a deity or gods, they are absolute. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That is our idea of gods, is that they are absolute creatures of morality in terms of they believe what they believe. Like literally in all of the books, it's always like, this is the goddess of this, and this.
Yeah. Nothing else.
And so it's like that is then reflected, but only seemingly in the bad people. The good people are able to kind of dip in and out of that and be a bit more kind of free. Because I guess that we see good as a more versatile place to be and evil is evil. Yeah. And I think also potentially maybe that's why. Because I was really interested in the idea of like what happens if you play a slightly morally ambiguous campaign or even an evil campaign, and I think that potentially why that's tricky to do is because of the absolute nature of the way we view evil in fantasy. Do you know what I mean? We struggle to see it in like, no, this character is just really selfish, or this character is absolutely out for themselves, or. Do you mean, or that there could be genuine motives for an evil act?
Absolutely.
Which I think ultimately is way more interesting for me anyway.
Absolutely, because I think you find so many, you currently find so many examples in pop culture. I mean, I just recently, a while back, just finished reading Saga, and there are so many, like, you know, all of the company members, freelancers, all of the freelancer assassins all have such incredibly interesting backstories and all have such incredibly interesting reasons as to why they are out to kill a child. Do you know what I mean? So Because again, we are grey. Like there's, you know.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
You can be a good person and still do something really, really shitty. And I think,
yeah.
And I think that's why I enjoy moral, like trying to put moral quandary as much as possible. Even though I run modules, I try to put as much moral quandary into my games as possible, but also into my characters, because I want to collaborate with the DM. Or with my players in such a way that they can be surprised by the events and the narrative of the campaign, that I can go, oh, you think you're about to just walk into this dungeon and lay waste all these people, but what you don't know is that sneakily, like, there's going to be some sort of innocent factor inside of this, and if you do this, there'll be these consequences.
Absolutely.
And that makes it kind of fun, because I kind of love watching my players go, hang on, we need to think. And I'm like,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so. And I think that, like, the blind panic that sets into a player, I know I've had it before, where you're like, you've got your sword drawn, you're charging in there, and then you're like, okay, how do I overcome this situation? I had to really think about the situation. And I think that, as well, what is amazing is that actually, like, we've probably all, on like a really basic level, had something like that in our lives before. We've had to make a decision where we've gone like, maybe I should have acted slightly differently, or maybe, do you know what I mean? And I feel like this is done in a way where it's fun and it's exciting, but we all do that in our daily lives. You know, the whole kind of conversation around allyship at the moment, whether that be kind of white on black or male on female or whatever that is, these decisions and crop up all the time, this morality of like, is that the... You know, how should I tackle this situation? I think we're probably getting towards the end of episode two.
Can I throw one thing in? I wanted.
Please.
I think I was having a conversation with a friend that kind of got to the bottom of like a lot of these issues. I think, or at least because what we want, I think, what we want as children is uncomplicated fantasy. Everything is just straightforward, and as I said, uncomplicated. And then I think as soon as you become an adult, though, things can get a lot more complex. They become a lot more complex. And you, obviously, for a lot of people, the game is escapism, so they prefer to keep that same level of black and white morality. We go into this cave, these kobolds have... like, they have, you know, a treasure there. We don't think these kobolds should have this treasure. We're going to go in and take the treasure. You know, we've been hired and going to do this. And we kill the kobolds, et cetera, et cetera. But rarely do you say, okay, but why are these kobolds actually here? Are they just, like, people living here? And are we just straight up invading their land? Like, they're not actually hurting anybody? Killing them?
Yeah.
Taking all of their stuff? Looting all of their corpses? Also, where are the kobold kids? Like, they may be stowed away somewhere, but there's going to be, like, a bunch of orphans here that are probably just going to starve to death now.
Yeah, or just repeat any vicious cycle that they're already on, because they're going to grow up feeling very embittered about the fact that all of their parents were murdered, you know?
And I think both ways can be really, I think, rewarding from a play standpoint, because obviously sometimes you just want to, you know, kill some mindless beings or, you know, win in an uncomplicated moral thing. But I think for me, I tend to prefer the more morally complex way.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that I would... This is a hot take potentially, but I think that anyone who says no, I just prefer going around and killing things, maybe like kind of hasn't had it introduced to them in the right way. Do you know what I mean? Hasn't had that moral question put to them in the right way, because I think that inherently as human beings, we want to be helpful, we want to be kind, we want to, do you know what I mean? And I think that even within this setting, if you come up against an issue where you can resolve it with like compassion, I think people do want to do that, and they do really enjoy that. You know, we mentioned Escape from the Bloodkeep last week. It turned into a good campaign. Like, they couldn't help but be, you know, but enjoy each other's company and get along, you know? So, like, you know, Brendan Lee Mulligan talks about the fact that he literally had to change that thing on the fly because he was expecting them all to beat each other up at the end, and they all just got along, you know? I think that's a really, really fascinating point, and I feel like we could easily talk about that for hours. I did just want to make a sort of a quick statement. As you can probably tell by our cover art, we do not sit on the fence when it comes to the events of recent times, and I did want to read just one little thing that I found in the on D&D Beyond, on Wizards of the Coast, which is to be greeted with stares and whispers, to suffer violence and insult in the street, and to see mistrust and fear in every eye. This is the lot of the tiefling.
Yeah.
I read this, and I just thought it was an incredibly powerful sentence that I think is a, albeit a small microcosm, but it is a microcosm of systemic and overt racism. And we just wanted to say, as a group and as a show, Black Lives Matter. We want to Absolutely. Build yes. a diverse and beautiful community here, but we do need your help to do so. So please take a minute, reach out to a friend, be kind. Let's all stand together. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Three Black Halflings, and make sure you tune in for the next episode. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thanks, guys. Thank
you. Bye.
Bye. Help me. No. Yeah!